Welcome back to another episode of the Mac Rumor Show. Good afternoon, Hartley. How's it going today?
It is slightly less warm in England, so I'm pleased. I can finally get a day's work done in peace.
It is burning hot here. It is 95, 96 degrees, which I believe is what it was for you, if not a little bit warmer. So I think that's like 35 degrees Celsius.
Yeah.
It's bad. We can't breathe. You know what? I think every episode needs to start with a weather discussion. And then I think everyone needs to comment their weather in their current location. So please go ahead and take the time to do that now. Especially
I can't think of anything
YouTube.
More exciting.
Yeah, this is the way everything should go. And speaking of, I don't know if this is exciting. there's been some things going on that it only feels right that we at least acknowledge. Because it's out in the community. I think Apple Insider has been reporting on a lot of this, and then others have sort of gone off of those reports. There's been a massive data leak, some stolen information about the iPhone 18 Pro. And a lot of it backs up leaks that were already out there. So we're kind of going to go through some of those leaks and new information that we might have found out about. But I just wanted to throw this over to you and kind of fill us in on what's going on here.
So there was a massive theft of data from Tata Electronics, which is one of Apple's suppliers in India. Very similar to Foxconn, another one of these major manufacturers that will be manufacturing upcoming iPhones. And of course, from our perspective in the media, it raises an ethical question because unlike a lot of this other information, which we regularly report on, which has kind of been, it's often been leaked. It's a leak from someone who knows something in the supply chain. It's usually a very small piece of information. What's happened here is actually stolen. And it is stolen with the intention of holding Tata to ransom as well to extract money. So we don't really want to be a part of that. But that being said, some of this information is now out there. Other outlets like Apple Insider have been dissecting some of this information and publicizing it. And since it's out there, there are some small little details in there that are worth discussing. And one of those is what is going on with the C2 modem, which is something that I don't think any of us really expected. So we know that the C2 modem has been rumored for the iPhone 18 Pro for years at this point. I mean, I even seem to remember that rumor from before was even the C1 was announced, that this roadmap for transitioning to Apple's custom modem technology. But what looks like is going to happen is there won't be a C2 modem in the United States. It will only be for international markets.
That's crazy. I'm confused as to why. So does the leak information say that?
No, it doesn't say why, but it's almost kind of obvious when you think about it. Right now, the cellular technology inside every iPhone that is available in the United States is different to every other iPhone in the rest of the world. And that is because of millimeter wave. Every other iPhone, like my iPhone here, which is a UK unit, does not have that little pill-shaped cutout on the top of the device for millimeter wave, whereas your one does. And millimeter wave 5G enables you to obtain very, very fast speeds at close proximity. And you get that, I believe, in like sports stadiums in the US. It's quite as narrow in terms of the kinds of places you can get coverage. And as I say, it has to be at close proximity. But when you can get that, it is extremely fast. But say in the rest of the world, like in Europe, we don't have millimeter wave infrastructure at all. So there's no point Apple selling devices with that technology in Europe. So it follows, therefore, that if the C2 modem is available in the rest of the world, but not in the US, then it must not have millimeter wave capability. Because right now the C1 modem doesn't support millimeter wave.
Correct.
So it would make sense that maybe they've just not been able to figure that out in time for the C2.
And so we're just retracting the C1 for US customers and going back to Qualcomm then?
pretty much. So it will stick with Qualcomm. I would be shocked if the C3 modem, I guess, next year does not have millimeter wave capabilities. It's a matter of time before that happens. But I think everyone was expecting the C2 to have millimeter wave. I think that was the evolution that was expected from the C1X to the C2. There definitely were reports about that. I don't remember who they were from. It may have been Ming-Chi Kuo, but it's definitely interesting because I don't know how Apple's going to position that, because the C2 coming to the Pro iPhones should be very exciting because it leads to enormous efficiency gains and actually faster performance as well. And in a Pro iPhone where you can talk about elongated battery life, that's a big deal. So is Apple going to get up on stage in September and say, the iPhone 18 Pro now is more efficient and faster in terms of cellular technology, but just not in the US? That's a bit of a weird predicament. And we're getting into this space. It's almost like an inverse of like Apple Intelligence in Europe, where it's kind of the other way around, where now there's going to be this feature that's missing in the US.
So does Apple even talk about the C2 modem then on stage?
I imagine in reality, it probably will gloss over it. It will mention maybe that it will feature the C2 modem in international markets. It will be on its comparison page. I don't know that it will say a huge amount more than that. And what I expect is that when you go on Apple Newsroom, which is regionalized to every market that Apple is present in, and there are always slight differences for that country. So obviously they're in different languages, but sometimes there are newsroom posts that are relevant to some countries and not others. I imagine that when you look, say, at, say, the UK iPhone 18 Pro press release, there will be a C2 section in that newsroom post that won't be in the US version. So, which will be weird, but
so what's interesting in my perspective, because I just did something on the MacBook Ultra, and that's reportedly going to have cellular capabilities. Does that just not get the C2 now in the US? Does that just get Qualcomm? Then couldn't we have just done Qualcomm for all of these years beforehand? Like
with the MacBook Ultra is there's nothing to say the MacBook Ultra would have millimeter wave. The problem that they've got with the iPhone is that if they were to give the iPhone 18 Pro the C2 under this sort of speculated plan, then you would be taking away a feature. And you've got all of those carriers in the US like Verizon that have got these vast build-outs of millimeter wave. And years have been spent telling consumers why they need millimeter wave and why they need 5G. And then suddenly the Pro iPhone drops that, the carriers would be furious. And so
I get that. Apple I get that point of view, but like for the Mac and I guess the iPad, it just doesn't really matter because they're like, listen, you're getting something. You just don't need millimeter wave on your MacBook, basically.
Well, they did that with the iPad. They dropped it with the iPad Pro, if you remember. It did have millimeter wave. And then when they switched to the C1X, they got rid of that.
I just don't want it to change that perspective.
It doesn't sell that many units compared to a Pro iPhone. Like the carriers are not going to lose their minds over the iPad Pro, which already sells in really low volume, especially the cellular models, losing millimeter wave. The Pro iPhone is a completely different situation. And so I think with the MacBook, to simply even get a cellular MacBook, it's fine if that doesn't have millimeter wave.
It's fine for now. You know what MacBook I think the carriers would be, well, they don't even really sell. What they would be upset about maybe would be like if the Neo in 5 years eventually gets, you know, if they trickle that down onto the entry level, who knows how long that could take, if ever. But that would be the one where I could see that being huge. Or like the MacBook Air, especially like for businesses and enterprises when they're traveling on the road and they want, you know, I can see them being upset about that, but that makes sense. The iPhone obviously sells way more. So, I mean, that's interesting. A little bit of information that we weren't really expecting there that came out of all of this.
The rest of what was disclosed here, was unsurprising and not very interesting. A lot of component information, parts lists, suppliers, nothing that is of a huge amount of interest to us. And there has been footage out there circulating. But what it will show is a device that looks just the same as an iPhone 17 Pro, pretty much. So
Well, there is one thing we should mention, right?
There is one very minor change, which has already been rumored, so it's not surprising.
Yes. Just
which is
confirms
the
it.
The kind of the more consistent uniform rear appearance of the device. So right now there is definitely a contrast between that ceramic shield glass insert in the back of the iPhone 17 Pro. It's much more prominent on the silver model, where that is a white piece of glass inside the silver unibody. And even on the other devices, the closest is maybe the dark blue, but certainly the orange. It is a slightly different shade of orange. It does look different in different lighting conditions. This is something that I think Apple is understandably a bit dissatisfied with. And it looks like the iPhone 18 Pro is going to have a color matched insert. So there may, you will still be able to perceive that there's an insert there. It is a different material. I don't know if it will be a perfect match, but it will look near on exactly the same. Rather than giving it, say, on the silver model, a white insert, it will actually be a silver insert to look just like that, the rest of that unibody, which you could do because it's blasted matte glass, which is very similar to blasted silver aluminium.
Yeah, there was also an image that honestly kind of made me skeptical about whether this whole thing was true or like kind of fake, some of these images, because one of them looked, it was supposed to be the dark cherry color, and it just looked orange to me. But, you know, lighting can mess with colors, as we all know. So who knows what that color is going to look like. But did you have any thoughts when you saw that? To me, it looked like orange. So that's kind of where I was like, is this actually the real image? Or
yeah, and also it's worth saying that among all of these files, it obviously was not just Apple information, nor was it iPhone 18 Pro information specifically. It's about a whole bunch of devices. So that easily could have just been an iPhone 17 Pro, because there was information in there about the iPhone 16, the iPhone 15, anything that Tata has manufactured. So that's not particularly surprising, I think.
Yeah. So there are other things that we could talk about with the iPhone 18 Pro here. Do you want to start with the camera, perhaps?
Yeah, we can do. So that's one of the bigger upgrades we're expecting this year, which is moving to a variable aperture main camera, which we've talked about quite a bit. I'm very interested in this because camera features are a really big driver of iPhone sales and interest. And certainly it is for me, because I always want to have the best pictures I can possibly take.
And before you get into what's making you really interested in this, I'm going to make everybody wait, because we have to take a quick minute to hear from today's sponsor. Now, before we get back into today's episode, I just want to take a quick minute to talk about today's sponsor, Storyblocks. If you've watched my YouTube videos for any amount of time, you've probably seen Storyblocks at work without even realizing it. Whether I need B-roll to help explain a feature, background music that fits the tone of a video, or sound effects to make edits feel more polished, it's just one of those tools that's become part of my regular workflow. What I really like is that everything in the library is 100% human-made. I never thought I'd have to say that, but every video clip, music track, sound effect, template, and image is created by professional artists and filmmakers and not AI-generated. Everything is professionally curated, pre-licensed, and ready to use, so I don't have to waste time worrying about licensing or searching through questionable assets. Plus, with unlimited downloads, I can experiment with different ideas until I find what works best, which honestly just saves me a ton of time every week. So head to storyblocks.com/Mac to access the human-made stock media library that's essential to my workflow. For a limited time, they're offering 15% off any annual plan, and that discount is only available through our link. So again, that's storyblocks.com/Mac for 15% off annual plans. Thanks, Storyblocks, for sponsoring this episode.
So what I am interested in is how much of a difference this really makes. And I know Apple will show off some very beautiful images that they will have got photographers to take with the iPhone 18 Pro. But I really want to see hands-on comparisons between the 17 Pro main camera and the 18 Pro to see that how much difference that variable aperture really makes. Certainly for things like low light, it should make a difference. I wonder if there'll be any manual controls in there as well. I just don't know. The iPhone camera is so good at this point.
Yeah.
And the annual upgrades feel quite incremental at this point, that it's rare when you get an improvement to the camera that really feels transformational. I mean, I think the last one that did feel huge was this 8X telephoto. Mm-hmm. But, you know, before that, moving to the 48 megapixel ultra wide, I don't really think that's changed a huge amount for me. I don't take a lot of ultra wide pictures. I know they can make other optimizations with the lenses or the sensor. And, you know, it was good when we moved up to 48 megapixels. That made a big difference. But my question is this one of those small little bumps that will make a minor improvement to image quality, or is this going to be another huge leap where it really does feel like night and day over the previous generation?
I think it's kind of hard to tell, honestly. It just depends. Personally, I think it will make a pretty big jump. The one thing I wish Apple would do is like stop doing professional photo shoots for their camera tests. Go outside, take a phone that's a couple years old, because that's what people are realistically upgrading from. You don't need to do year over year. I don't need to see what year over year improvements are. It's probably not going to make that much of an impact anyways. Take an iPhone 15 Pro, take a iPhone 18 Pro. Go out there, do a shot in like a man on the street style thing. I think that would be really like a lot more impactful than seeing these beautiful people that they pull in these ridiculously, you know, well-lit, really attractive environments that are appealing to the eye. And it's just like, look at this really good picture. That oftentimes I question whether, you know, especially from other companies, not Apple, but other companies have been caught in the past with, you know, some nefarious activities there when the photos happen. Not saying that they're not legitimate, but, you know, I just think you're really like just making it easier to have the photos look at, like, just let's just showcase what it actually does in kind of like a live demo environment, even though it's not necessarily a live demo. You know, we don't need to see these touched up photos or at least just really high quality environments for production when they're doing these shoots.
I agree with the entry-level iPhone, at least. I think that certainly with the Pro iPhones now, they've repositioned that toward photographers,
sure,
professional videographers, and I understand why they feel a need to show what that device is able to do in a professional context. But sometimes I think, like, when they show off what, I don't know, like an iPhone 16e, the kind of photos it can take, I think this actually is not as engaging as it could be. But I think this maybe speaks to a slightly larger problem, which we've actually talked about a few times over the last few weeks, which is some of how some of the way in which these devices are introduced is maybe starting to just get a little bit stale. And the reason why WWDC this year was quite refreshing was because it was different.
Yeah.
And it was a lot more raw and authentic. And while it wasn't as raw or authentic as the live shows from before COVID, it certainly did feel a lot more candid. And I would like to see things move back in that direction. I understand it's a pendulum, but I do cringe when Apple, and I don't know actually that they do it so much anymore, but they definitely went through a phase of saying every year and saying over and over in the event, this iPhone is the greatest iPhone we've ever built.
Yeah.
And I think, telling me that? Like,
of course.
Are you going to tell me that this is not the greatest iPhone you've ever built? Yeah. Like, what does that actually mean? Like, that's a waste of words. That's not good marketing. That's actually pretty bad marketing.
Why wouldn't you have made the greatest iPhone this year? Like, would you have just settled for something slightly better than
exactly
a couple of your iPhone?
You're debuting a new device here.
Yeah.
You're telling me all the ways in which it's good. That is not, like, no person that is interested in buying an iPhone, even if they know nothing about tech, thinks, oh yeah, this is the new model. And this one, I don't know if this is better than the model from 5 years ago. I don't know. Yeah. I need someone to tell me. And it's just that kind of that kind of hollow rhetoric, which can sometimes kind of creep in. And I agree with you that it kind of goes back to some of those really glossy images. I want to be able to see that the phone is capable of that kind of thing, especially the Pro models.
That's what I'm saying. With the Pro models, maybe you can showcase both because they're the same cameras.
Yeah, absolutely.
For the most part. Like, I mean, you're just not getting the extra camera, but they are the same lenses for the most part, for the last few years at least. I don't know what's going to happen this year. It looks like it'll kind of be, you know, but like it just... Google does this, I think, sometimes. They're very into like the more relaxed like marketing, and Samsung has done it. And even if they give it to like a professional, you know, photographer, and then they follow their journey, that's slightly better than just being like, look at what we did with these. You know, we hired this person. Well, they didn't even say who it is. But look at these photos of these models that we have in this really well-lit environment that's perfect. That you probably aren't going to take in, you know, any pictures like this ever. How about you do a little man on this, give it to some random person and be like, this is what they were able to do with it. I think that's far more engaging marketing.
Yeah, I just would like to see things changed up a little bit. I mean, I think that the iPhone 18 Pro is going to be a tall order. And what I mean by that is that it's going to be a hard sell. Because this device is definitely going to be more expensive. I mean, we talked about this last week. When we had that discussion last week, it was actually before the price rises were announced.
Sorry, everyone.
And now that we know that every single product line, with the exception of AirPods, Studio Display, Apple Watch, and iPhone, has had price hikes, everything, whether it's an Apple TV or a HomePod Mini, all of it has now increased in price. All around the world, the iPhone 18 Pro just is going to cost more. There is no way that that is now not going to happen. That seems pretty locked in. If the iPhone 18 Pro now starts at $1,300, just starts, and then maybe you want a Pro Max, you want to bump up to 512 gigabytes of storage, that is a seriously expensive device.
No one should even buy it.
I mean,
just go buy a 17 Pro.
It depends what you're upgrading from. Right. But of course, it will have an effect on 17 Pro price as well because it'll inflate those in the aftermarket.
Yeah.
So I'm so interested to see how Apple is able to put the argument as to why you should buy an iPhone 18 Pro, because a lot of these upgrades are good. Like, we're expecting a bigger battery. Obviously, we're expecting this variable aperture camera. The A20 chip is expected to be a lot more capable. We've got the C2 modem, at least in international markets, so I can look forward to that. But we're not expecting any dramatic changes this year, because last year was that year. And some years, we're very used to this in the Apple community, that we just have a small upgrade year. And while this is not going to be the smallest upgrade we've ever seen, I think it is going to be fairly small. I'm not seeing anything here that is massively exciting. I mean, the smaller dynamic island will capture interest for a little while, makes it maybe look a tiny bit fresher. But my bet is that the majority of people that go and pick up an iPhone 18 Pro in the Apple Store in the first couple of weeks are not even going to notice that that dynamic island is a few millimeters narrower. Certainly, like our reference point for this is the iPhone 13, when we got the narrower notch. How many people really noticed that narrower notch? How much did it really matter?
I can tell you that not one general consumer that has an iPhone that usually asks me questions every year about like, which one should I get? Or, what, you know, I saw the new iPhone and this is cool, has ever mentioned anything about the dynamic island, the notch. In fact, I don't think any non-tech person has ever talked to me about the dynamic island before. Probably doesn't even know what it's called. I'm going to be honest with you. I'm not trying to insult people. If you're listening to this, I don't really consider you to be the person that I'm talking about. I'm talking about friends and family. They upgrade every 3 to 4 years, if that. And they just, you know, I got a friend that will just come up to me and be like, this is the new iPhone. Tell me what's good about it. And when I point that out, they'll be like, I didn't even notice that. And it's just like, oh, okay, cool. You had no idea that there's this, you know, maybe now people will notice it more because of Siri. But yeah, have you ever had a conversation with a general person about the dynamic island before?
No, I agree. I think it goes to show how the tech community's perspective on these things is totally different to ordinary consumers. And that could be for better or for worse.
It sometimes makes me wonder, like, if you really take a step back, whenever I say statements like that, does it not make you kind of just be like, who is Apple actually making these iPhones for?
Well, I think it just goes to show that maybe we don't always understand what actually is selling iPhones. Uh-uh. We can think that it's these small upgrades or it can be a new color option or something, but it's probably just stuff that we're not even aware of. And my bet is that Apple could actually release an iPhone that is no different other than just maybe a new color and a new number in the name. And people would still buy it because they're on carrier plans and they want to be seen with the new color and the new iPhone. And I think that that is what drives so many sales, because you're not telling me that I see iPhone 17 Pros everywhere. Mm-hmm. Way more than previous new iPhone generations. It has been, I totally believe these reports about it being insanely popular because I feel like everyone I know has one.
It's also a really good phone.
Yeah, I think it is. To go back to what I was saying before, it is the greatest iPhone they've ever built.
It is, in fact, the greatest iPhone ever built.
But I don't think that the people who have that device bought it because it's got an 8X telephoto camera. Or maybe even the majority of them know what a telephoto camera even is. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of it just comes down to marketing. I mean, some of this stuff is great for marketing. The Dynamic Island, I will actually say, do you remember those iPhone 14 Pro ads that they did where it just showcased all of the animations and jumping between apps and it was so fluid and engaging in the way that it was animated? That sold iPhones. Undoubtedly, that must have sold iPhones. That was a great ad campaign because it was so different and so visual and kind of easy to understand. It was nothing that we'd really seen on a smartphone before. People aren't so interested in it anymore. But the challenge that a device like the iPhone 18 Pro has is, where is your cool feature to show off? I don't know that it actually has one. And that's fine because sometimes we do that. But on the whole, it usually helps if there is something to lean on. I mean, like the iPhone 13 Pro is a good example of that. What really was there to show off on that device? There was very little. There was the ProMotion display, but you can't show that on a billboard or in an ad. I mean, it had a better camera, but everyone knows the new iPhone's got better cameras. So some years this just happens. But the fact that this year it's going to coincide with those price increases is what I think is going to be quite interesting to see, because even I am kind of thinking, do I really want to shell out to buy a new iPhone this year? Do I really need to do that? I mean, do I need a new camera control that is less capable than the current one, but might work a bit better? Not really. I don't really care about that. I don't really care about a narrower dynamic island. I don't care about the N2 chip in there. Yeah. So what is there for me to grab onto? And there are some things, you know, I'm interested in this variable aperture camera, but it is difficult. And I think that this year is clearly the stopgap before the 20th anniversary iPhone, which we definitely should do a dedicated episode on soon.
Yeah.
Because that is going to be a huge change and will be one of those kind of must upgrade years. But how do you feel about it? I mean, you will pick up one of these devices inevitably anyway.
Yeah, I don't really have a choice.
What's your sense of it? Do you
like
feel
like just
that,
as the upgrade as a whole?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm very underwhelmed. I honestly haven't even thought about it because all I care about is the iPhone Ultra. That's all I want to see at the event. They should spend 10 minutes talking about the iPhone 18 Pros and then the rest of it on the Ultra. And perhaps maybe something else if they have anything available for that time. But it looks like the iPhone 17 Pro that I've been using for the last year. And maybe the cameras will be better. Variable aperture certainly does help, although Samsung's had it before. And I don't know, does anyone really talk about how great that was? Not really.
Well, Samsung removed it.
Yeah, it was probably because no one cared and they probably didn't do a great job marketing it, to be honest. And I don't know that the people who use Samsung phones are like, I use this because it has the best camera. I think there are different reasons why people use Samsung phones. I think it's just a lot of it's just like people don't like Apple and they're like, Samsung is the best Android device, which I feel like you could confidently say it wouldn't. Yeah, it would probably be my choice, to be honest with you now. I think back in the day, no, I would have gone Google. But now I do really like the features that Samsung offers and the style of phones. But like, is there a reason why you should use a Samsung phone that's camera specific? No, I think it's mostly because it's Android. It's the top quality one. People probably liked writing with the pen, which they don't even really add to most things anymore. It's big. I don't know. There's good features, but like, I don't think that's what they market them for. I don't know. I don't think this is going to be a good selling phone, especially with the price hikes coming in, which is hilarious, by the way, that we did a whole episode talking about how things were going to get really expensive. We talked a lot about the iPhones getting expensive, and those were the only things that didn't go up in price. So Apple really got us there. Don't buy an Apple TV. Oh my God.
Yeah, that's a very, very big price rise.
I want to hear your thoughts on that briefly after we take one break to talk for here from today's sponsors again. All right. So Apple TV in 15 seconds.
So by percentage, this is the most expensive or the largest price increase, going from $129 up to $200. Now, the Apple TV is not a very popular device anyway. I don't think this is going to help it.
Or that's 150 all. To 250. And also, I don't know if that statement's true. Maybe not from a sales perspective, but man, the people who love Apple TV love Apple TV. I think I've mentioned
I
many times.
I love Apple TV. I would not be without it. It is essential. I would actually use my TV a huge amount less if I did not have an Apple TV. But at that price, yeah. I mean, what do I do with it that ultimately the built-in software in my TV can't do already? Nothing. It's just because I like the ecosystem. I like the remote. It's just a kind of nice to have. But when you compare that to something like an Apple Watch, AirPods, that has these sort of dramatic reasons why you might want to use that, you don't need an Apple TV.
I really did wish Apple went through with the TV, like the actual TV unit thing, and just made that the software that you get with it, so I don't have to have anything plugged into it. How great would that have been? Just a really nice display, OLED TV, you know? I don't know.
I mean, that was rumored for
many years,
a long time ago. But I think the challenge is that just because Apple doesn't manufacture its own displays, it never has. We have never seen an Apple-designed display.
Just pull some Samsung into it like you do for everything else.
But then I think LG. They were saying, well, if we're going to just do what every other TV manufacturer does, which is just buy a panel, make a housing, put the panel in the housing, and then make it work. Like, what are we doing differently here? What are we doing better than competitors? And I don't know that they really could have done anything other than put the Apple TV in there.
But it's the best TV ever built. That's what they're doing differently.
Well, that's what they would have said.
Yes. Anyways, a lot of price hikes there. And going back to the iPhone 18 Pro, if it's going to be substantially more, assuming, let's just say somehow the secondary market for the 17 Pros don't go up, or you can find them still relatively cheap, you know, even if you find a nicely used one that's, you know, $500-$600, just do that. It's worth it.
I'm so interested to see where it actually falls as well, because right now, correct me if I'm wrong, the iPhone 18 Pro starts at
$1,099.
Pro starts at $1,099. Some of the estimates put it at $1,399, a $200 price increase. That feels very big, but it could be more. I mean, the average increase of a lot of these other products we've seen was about $200. You can see that on most of the Macs, most of the iPads, it's kind of hovering around $200. I think the average across all of the products that they did was, I think it came out to about $275 on average. But that includes like the Mac Studio where they increased it by like...
How did that not raise it even more? It was like $2,000 almost for the high end.
The majority of the devices went up by $200. Even like the Vision Pro went up by $200. So I think probably, if I had to guess, it is going to be probably $1,399.
Yeah, it's too much. Too much for a phone that's identical.
Certainly, I can't see it being less than $1,299.
But subsidized world, that's like $5 extra, so it won't matter.
And that will be fine, but. Yeah. At the high end, when you look at a Pro Max and you add storage, I mean, how much is a 2 terabyte iPhone 18 Pro Max going to cost now?
A lot. But you know what? You're going to get a new reflective Apple logo on the back.
And some people will buy it straight away. Yeah. But it's a shame because it feels like the iPhone 17 Pro has done so well. Uh-huh. It is such a good device and has been so popular. And I just can't see this being very popular now. I mean, it will drive a lot of people down to the entry-level iPhone 18 when it becomes available. The 17 will remain on sale for another 6 months or so. But I don't know. It's just a bit of a shame, isn't it?
Here's an old person boomer take that I'm going to give you guys. Do we need all this AI advancements? Can we stop here? I think we're fine with it. It's now impacting our day-to-day life in a negative way where everything's just getting raised in products that we want to buy. We don't need more than this. I don't need an entire app being coded and written in 30 seconds. How about you do the work back like the old days where you had a team of developers?
Is this even entirely jobs? Due to that?
I don't know. That's what they
because
say. So
there was an interesting report from Micron, which is one of Apple's memory suppliers. And they didn't say that they blame Apple for these price increases, but they kind of said that the people they supply memory to have not helped with their pricing tactics because Apple is known, it's been known for years, to really squeeze its suppliers for the lowest possible prices. And the way that it usually does that is by locking them into contracts very early for a very large amount of its supply. What Micron said is that this negotiating tactic meant that they were locked into such low pricing for such a long time with Apple that when they had to increase prices in response to the global memory shortage and just the demand of AI data centers, it then had to continue to supply that memory at a price that was well below where it should have been, which meant that then when they had the opportunity to raise prices, they had to really boost them up to try and get back to where they were, which presents an interesting question, I think. And while obviously Micron's going to blame other people, and it isn't even Micron's fault, it's just the fact of requiring so much AI demand now around the world. But it is interesting that maybe Apple's negotiating tactics with suppliers has maybe not helped because Apple charges very high premiums on its devices, but squeezes its suppliers very hard, so it maintains very good margins. And it does make me also wonder, could Apple not have eaten into its margins anymore? I know that's what it's been doing up to now, but did the Apple TV really need to go up by that much to protect your margins on that device? I don't know if I agree with that.
You shouldn't have been. The one that's really the issue is the fact that they raised refurbished prices. That's the one that's the problem. I mean,
also, I don't know that it couldn't have been a smaller increase.
And it doesn't need to be an increase at all. Those products exist already. You didn't manufacture those with new chips that cost more, unless this happened well beforehand.
Also, I think it just would have been helpful if maybe some of the entry-level devices hadn't have been touched. So, like the entry-level iPad going up by $100 is a real shame. The MacBook Neo.
Those are probably the most popular selling ones, though.
They are, but they're gateways to the rest of the ecosystem. And
true.
I think that in some ways, it's understandable to increase the price on the MacBook Pro and the iPad Pro, because if you're buying that device, you're not a price-conscious user. You're buying it either because it's for work and you're going to make that money back in some way, or a company is buying it, or you are buying it because you're an enthusiast and you're interested in tech and you want the latest and greatest. Those customers can be the ones to absorb those price rises. But I do kind of feel bad for, you know, the parents that are buying their kid their first iPad and have now got to spend an extra $100 on that. That feels a little bit not right to me. And I would rather have had more incremental price rises. I would have rather that Apple 6 months ago put prices up by a smaller amount and was more selective about the products. I mean, the Vision Pro needs a price
rise. That's a bold move to put an extra amount on something that isn't selling anyways.
I think it was on it may have been on Daring Fireball, but I did see it was a funny comment about the Vision Pro's price rise, which is they just gave it to the Vision Pro to make the Vision Pro feel better, to make it feel included.
Make it feel part of the gang.
Yeah, make it feel like one of the guys.
Yeah, yeah, what about us? Well, you're going to get a price range and no one's buying you anyway, so who cares? Might as well.
Yeah, I mean,
which is a shame. You know, here's my weekly diatribe. The Vision Pro is a good product. It just is too expensive.
It may be even, it would have been an opportunity to me to have been maybe a chance to recalibrate pricing across the whole product lineup. Mm-hmm. And maybe they could have accompanied the price increases on some products with a price cut on others. Mm-hmm. And kind of shifted things around. Like, what a great bit of press for Vision Pro it would have been if they'd said, actually, we have decided to cut the price of the Vision Pro to $29.99. And we are also going to cut
the
price.
Still too high.
It's too much, but they could have done it on cut the Apple TV, cut the full-size HomePod, keep the HomePod Mini where it is, keep the entry-level iPad where it is, and the iPad Mini. But increase the iPad Pro, increase the MacBook Pro, increase the MacBook Air, but keep the Neo where it is. Keep the Mac Mini where it is. But if you want to push Mac Studio up, you can do that now because there is no Mac Pro. I think that that might have been a bit, maybe more palatable. I don't know.
One thing I'm confused on, and this could be the last thing, unless actually there's one more thing I do want to talk about going back to the iPhone 18 Pro, but real quick on the price increases thing. What's going on with the Apple TV? Because this would have been the time, if the reports are true, that there's just product sitting in the warehouse, ready to go. New Apple TVs, new HomePods. Why are we raising the prices on this then? Just release the new one with the new price increase and it's slightly better. It's not great. It's still stupid, but it's slightly less stupid than just putting a higher price tag.
I have the same question about HomePod Mini, which
30-year-old product
has been available for nearly six years now.
Exactly.
A six-year-old product that does not support any Apple intelligence features at all. Siri on that device
anything.
Is terrible and will continue to be terrible. And now that device is what? $150? It's gone up by
50 bucks. And so you have to imagine there's one of two things here. Maybe it's not. There has to be a bigger change for these, right? Like it's got to be something that they're holding on for an event, because there's no reason why, if it's not getting the new Siri and it's not some sort of greater deal where it's coming in with this home hub and everything, that they couldn't have just been like, hey, the new HomePods, the new Minis, or the new Apple TVs coming later this year. We're not touching the prices on this one, but this is going to have new Siri capabilities. We'll talk about it later this year, but it's going to start at this price. They could have done something. I know that they've never really done that before, but they could have done something like that to like kind of help with that. Otherwise, you're just kind of getting crapped on for negative press because you decided to raise the prices on something, or just don't do anything. Take the loss on those and increase the prices later.
Anyway, yeah. I think that would have been fine to just do it later.
Greedy.
I mean, I've been saying this for months, as you know. I can foresee an Apple event coming dedicated to the smart home.
Well, and that's what I'm saying. It's got to be almost guaranteed at this point, right?
I don't know. Maybe they'll do it in September with the iPhone 18 Pro. They'll do 18 Pro, 18 Pro Max. Then we will go into the home. We'll go with HomePod Mini, Apple TV, this smart home hub. And then they'll do one more thing as the iPhone Ultra. That's a good event.
What about Apple Watch?
Oh, yeah. I forgot about the Apple Watch. Just like Apple forgets about the Apple Watch.
Yeah. Although, aren't there some rumors about a magnetic system again? Isn't that coming back?
Oh, yeah.
Or is that for next year?
That's next year. Yeah, I would fully expect that Apple Watch this year at the event will be 5 minutes. It will
be
so
minimal. The last 5 years?
Last year, but last year in particular, it was very, very brief because they had so little to say. The majority of what they focused on was the satellite connectivity on the Apple Watch Ultra. But that's one feature on one watch.
And I'm glad you brought that up, because that is the last thing I just want to spend a couple of minutes talking on. And it's not about the Apple Watch, but it's the 5G over satellite feature that is rumored for the iPhone 18 Pro lineup. Is this actually could be something really, really big if it works the way I would like it to work. But my guess is it's probably not going to work that way. it's still going to be a real pain to try to get it to connect, isn't it? And it's not going to just be something that automatically switches over and you don't even notice it. And
no, because that
would
be
like the rest of the,
that would be a free service. I mean, Apple talked about charging for these satellite features initially, but it has never done it because who would pay unless you are a regular hiker or something and you go out in the middle of nowhere where you have no service. But
or you have a crappy service carrier and you're in a spot all the time that has really bad reception.
If this is a fully fledged, you can just keep using Safari when you have no service, maybe that is good reason to pay for that directly to Apple.
Yeah.
But in reality, I expect they won't want to anger carriers because that's the whole reason why there was so much argument inside Apple about this feature in the first place. That probably it will let you access a very basic version of Safari that maybe will be limited to certain sites. So you won't be able to like stream video. You won't be able to navigate to YouTube or anything. Maybe you will just be able to access like government websites, public services, things like that. Where
ways
you may
to get yourself out of trouble.
Yeah, in an emergency. And maybe it will let you do things like communicate with Siri over 5G in the satellite. If it needs to go to the web, it will let you use AI services. It will let individual apps, like the Maps app, load stuff online. But I don't think it's going to be Safari. I think it's more so going to be when individual apps want to go, like, I don't know, say you want to send a message on Instagram or something. It will let you do that, maybe, but not in a...
So you're telling me when I'm in SOS and I just want to keep watching YouTube, I can't watch YouTube?
I would be surprised if you could.
Well, that's the feature I would pay for.
Yeah.
I would like it to where if I drop down to one bar of LTE, I have the ability to switch over to satellite and it should work well and I'll pay for that. Or
I would
maybe
like
the carriers
too.
Just figure it out. Because there's often times where I live, man, it doesn't matter what service you have, you're going to have LTE, it's going to be one bar, or it's going to say 5G. Have you ever noticed this? I don't know how this is. Well, I guess you don't have millimeter wave, but with Verizon specifically, if I don't have the ultra wideband little logo there, I have essentially no service, which is utterly ridiculous. It'll say 5G. And there was a world where we'd had 5G, and that meant you had great service. It's when you dropped to LTE that you essentially had no service. And then if you think back to when we had LTE over 3G or whatever it was back then, it essentially meant that if you dropped from LTE down, you had no service. Why does the more we progress, the one underneath that worked perfectly fine for years, all of a sudden is just unable to do anything? Maybe there's a basic misunderstanding of it that I just don't get, but I would
have loved Apple to launch its own carrier service, which it was planning to do. And that's actually where all of these satellite features came from in the first place. It was that project that was reorganized. But in a different world, Apple by now is a carrier and you don't even need to bother with your conventional carriers. Apple cut out the middleman. I would have loved them to do that.
How has Starlink not become like a data carrier? I'm surprised.
Maybe it will eventually.
It's actually really good when you get on planes. It's amazing, I'll be honest. I haven't used it in the other environments that like I think you can get it for your home. But yeah, it's really good. So I would love something like that in the future.
Yeah, that's the kind of feature that I think would enable Apple to offer a more cohesive all-in-one product as well. Like we've heard these rumors about device subscription services. Imagine if you could actually just buy your device on a monthly plan, including your service, and then Apple just, you ship it back to them when you want the new device and it just rolls over. Everything's with one company. It would be perfect.
I mean, as somebody who misses the days of actually owning something, I would hate that, but also that's just kind of what we do anyways. I mean,
It would be very convenient.
Right.
And we know that, I mean, everyone has bad experiences with carriers. They are a nightmare to deal with. If you ever want to speak to anyone, you ever want to change your plan, it is always a nuisance. And they always are basically overcharging for their service.
I mean, you kind of have this already with the iPhone upgrade program. You just don't have the service thing.
Yeah, but that makes a huge difference. Yeah.
Do you remember the early on years of the iPhone upgrade program? They still brought in like representatives from like T-Mobile, AT&T, and Verizon to the Apple stores. And so you still got that great experience of they can't get your service to get ported over correctly. God, I remember people going in and just like spending hours there because the portion that you're trying to navigate away from, the whole point of the iPhone upgrade program, so you don't have to deal with carriers and you just deal with Apple, you still got screwed in the store when they tried to port your number over.
This is why I always have and always will just buy my iPhone outright.
Unlocked.
Not on a carrier plan, unlocked.
Yeah.
And then I can do what I like.
Yep.
And then if I want to negotiate my contract, I do that separately and it's nothing to do with my device.
And it was
that was what I would recommend to anyone.
And it was even better back then with physical eSIMs, which or physical SIMs, which you do still have. I do not. So while
I've moved over to eSIM anyway.
Okay. Well, they say eSIM is easier, but I disagree. I think it's easier for me to poke out the little chip and put it in the other one. I can do that
when
faster than I can navigating the eSIM menu.
It works so well.
But it's
reassuring with stuff like if you lose your device and you obviously lose the SIM, that does make things easier.
I guess losing a SIM is really hard.
Yeah, but what if you lose your device? What if you lose the device?
I guess you
lose the SIM that's in that device. Whereas
but they
now,
can
if
just
it's an eSIM,
turn those
just
off and then
it.
Just make you a new one.
Yeah, but it's still a headache to do that. Whereas now I can just navigate to my carrier and download the eSIM again.
So do you want to know what's happened to me more so than losing my device or losing my SIM? Trying to port over a number to another iPhone and it gets lost in the ether and then I have to drive to the store and have them figure out a way to get it back. That's happened to me twice, actually. So that is a bigger pain than something that doesn't really happen. But at least in my specific world, I can't speak for everyone. Maybe you've lost your phone. Maybe you've lost your SIM card. Please let us know in the comments down below. And with that said, this was an episode about the iPhone 18 Pro. So let us know your thoughts on that and also the price hikes, because we put out an entire episode last week speculating, which we were correct on, you know, there was going to be price hikes. We just didn't know that it wasn't going to be that.
It wasn't going to be the day iPhone. After we'd recorded.
It wasn't going to be the day after either, where we talked about the iPhone mostly getting price hikes, and that one didn't get touched yet. It will for the next year. Anyways, let us know, hit us up, and we will talk to you guys, we will see. We won't do any of those things. We'll put out another episode next week. Thank you.
1's tech team isn't just talking about multi-agentic AI. They already deployed one. It's called Chat Concierge, and it's simplifying car shopping. Using self-reflection and layered reasoning with live API checks, it doesn't just help buyers find a car they love. It helps schedule a test drive, get pre-approved for financing, and estimate trade-in value. Advanced, intuitive, and deployed. That's how they stack. That's technology at Capital One.